Morning, everybody. My talk's, I think it's good that it's in sequence with the one you just heard, because you're going to be hearing about a very different kind of neonicotinoid, sort of at the other end of the spectrum as to the way these neonicotinoids behave. So basically, what I'm going to try to put together is a summary of the last couple of years of work, and the general objectives we had were to just compare the uptake and efficacy of three different neonicotinoids, and the first two will be the ones I'll show data for. We also have some for clothianidin. We wanted to look at the influence of a few different factors, plant type, the application method, and also the application timing. And ultimately, what we would like to do is, using this ELISA technology, is be able to measure what's actually in the plant and figure out what the minimum effective dose is. Because we know sometimes we're probably putting too much out. Some of these smaller trees and shrubs, sometimes we're probably putting too much out or too little out. So as far as what we did, our main focus was looking for the presence of these neonicotinoids in plant tissue. And we used this test that's been known for a couple of decades now. I used it 20 years ago when I was working on viruses in plants, and now they've come up with ELISA tests for several of the neonicotinoids that can detect the actual presence of different chemicals. And these tests are very, very sensitive. The kits that's available for dinotefuran will detect down to 1.5 parts per billion, and I believe the one for imidacloprid down to 0.2. And relative to some of the more conventional techniques that are used to measure pesticides and plant material, water, et cetera, the ELISA tests are quite inexpensive. When you're doing as many as we have, it doesn't seem that way sometimes given how fast it chews up the budget. Okay. It has ceased working. Yeah, I was right. Oh, there we go. I'll just roll it. I'll be okay. So these are the neonicotinoids. And there are five main ones that are out there, and there are three different subfamilies. The one I'm going to be focusing a lot on is on the right, dinotefuran, a very different looking molecule on the left side of the molecule. You'll see that ring is quite different than the other neonicotinoids. And just a couple of factors. There are several different factors that will affect the way these things behave, but there's a couple that I really want to point out, one being the water solubility of the molecules. This sort of surprised me when I first saw it. I thought they were off by a decimal place, but they're not. This is how soluble dinotefuran is. And then as you go out to the right, you see imidacloprid on the far right. Helps kind of explain what you just heard about from Nate in terms of how these products move in plants and how quickly you would expect to see them in plant tissue. And corresponding with that, and this generally is sort of an inverse relationship, their tendency to bind to soil it sort of follows the reverse trend, whereas dinotefuran tends to have the lowest binding coefficient to organic matter, and then the imidacloprid has the highest. So you would expect, looking at the solubility in the KOCs, that they would behave differently when it came to plants. And we were finally able to look at that and find out that they certainly do. So we looked at several different pests. The first, our silverleaf whitefly, we started in the greenhouse. Just looking at the efficacy of dinotefuran safari, it's called, in the greenhouse, and then also marathon, the name for imidacloprid. And what we're seeing here, this is just whitefly counts over time, and you're seeing that the dinotefuran is a very, very good whitefly material and gave very, very good control through that roughly 10-week trial. Excuse me. Now here's what the ELISA data showed us. And those green bars show the nanograms of active ingredient, basically per gram of leaf tissue, parts per billion, over time. And then corresponding, you see the same bar on purple for imidacloprid. And what you're seeing is that just because we use labeled rates, it just so happened, and I wanted to adjust it so that you know, that we're putting roughly twice as much dinotefuran per pot as imidacloprid. So you could pretty much chop those green bars in half if you really wanted to get a more realistic comparison of the two products. And then just we moved into the field, into the landscape, and looked at a few different application methods. The first two are pretty well known, a soil drench, and this is something that a lot of arborists will use. They'll simply run a hose into their truck and a pump and drench the soil at the base of a trunk. This is a hemlock tree. And then the curate soil injection is the one that Nate talked about. And then there's another one that kind of goes back to the old days of acephate and some of the other older chemistries, where you can literally put it on the bark of the tree. And this is a very concentrated spray solution, similar to what would go in a curate's injector. This is a magnolia tree in Florida in a study. So the first thing I'll talk about is hemlock woolly adelgid. This is just a study that we started back in October of 2006, looking at a couple of different trees. These trees were basically side by side, and this is what they looked like. They were heavily defoliated by adelgid, and we treated them at our sort of our mid-range for our safari, and the top range or the highest use rate for imidacloprid. And there's roughly a 20-30% more imidacloprid went out per inch of diameter, but they were fairly comparable. And this is what we saw over time. And this just shows you the percentage of the terminals that were infested. And as you would expect, and as Nate talked about, the imidacloprid does not show up as quickly. We really didn't see much evidence of a reduction in infestation for roughly 6 months after application. And the thing that you see correspondingly with the dinotefuran is very, very rapid control. The adelgid populations dropped at beginning at the first sample date, you know, roughly 2 to 3 weeks after application. So here's this contrast that goes back to the physical properties of these molecules. They just behave very, very differently, showing this dinotefuran is taken up very quickly by these trees. But as you get out to the right end of the graph, then you start to see what Nate was talking about, and that is your dinotefuran efficacy begins to fall off, and the imidacloprid efficacy begins to rise correspondingly. This is the same day, this is the ELISA data, and it mirrors very nicely what we saw as far as efficacy, and that is we have two formulations here. The green bar shows, or the green line shows a drench, and the black shows a 2% granule that was just sprinkled on the soil surface. And then the purple is the imidacloprid. And again, we had trouble finding any imidacloprid in the foliage up through about 6 months after application, but then it began to rise. And correspondingly, the dinotefuran took a sharp drop about the time they begin to put new foliage out. And this is what the trees look like at 20 months, those same two trees. And so what we saw was very rapid recovery, and these trees were obviously in severe decline at the time of application. So the one on the left was the safari-treated or dinotefuran tree, and the one on the right was a merit-treated tree. This is 20 months after application. This is a close-up of what the foliage looks like. I will tell you that at this point in time, there's not adelgids on that imidacloprid tree, treated tree, or the dinotefuran-treated tree. They're very, very clean, but you're seeing the difference in how quickly the dinotefuran got up into the trees in terms of how quickly it responded. So where this is an issue, and it is in the southern Appalachians, where we have a lot of trees in severe decline, and where speed is of the essence, the dinotefuran is a good choice. Moving down to southern Florida, we have this new invasive called ficus whitefly. It's knocking leaves off of ficus plants, particularly the hedges. And this is some data from Catherine Mannion, and she just looked at several different application methods. I'm only showing the drenches for imidacloprid and safari. These are relatively small trees, only about 5 inches in diameter. And what we see is that 2 weeks after application, we already saw a sharp drop in the number of white flies that she found live nymphs on the leaves. But as we got out in time, the imidacloprid did go up into those trees and also kicked in and was providing good efficacy as we got out somewhere between 4 and 8 weeks after application. The ELISA results are still preliminary. I don't have the data to show you yet, but basically what we did see was extremely rapid uptake. At 2 weeks we saw, I had to go back and have the guys do it again. There was huge amounts of product in these trees. We had way more than we needed. These were up over 10 parts per million in the leaf tissue. Very low concentration, however, by 5 months out, it dropped off. I think it was still at efficacious levels, but by 5 months it had taken a big drop. And the application methods, we did look at all the ones that I had mentioned. They were all very comparable, except that the soil or the trunk spray was actually still detectable at quite high levels at 5 months. And I don't know whether the bark is acting as a reservoir or what. I'm moving to boxwood leaf miner. This is some data I think Casey Sklar presented last year. Very similar what we're looking at here. Again, percent mortality over time. Very rapid increases of fall applied test in October in the Philadelphia area. I was really surprised at how fast it acted. But within just really a few weeks, we had extremely high mortality with the dinotefuran. The imidacloprid took out to a couple of months, but it did provide good control. And ultimately, as we moved out a year after application, it was providing better control than the dinotefuran. So again, going back to these properties, these molecules, what you're seeing here kind of makes sense. And there is our uptake, same thing that I've been presenting before. That purple line shows imidacloprid, the green line shows the drench with dinotefuran, and the black line shows the 2% granule. again, very quick detection in these plants. But as we got out 280 days, they dropped very rapidly as these plants began to flush and produce a lot of new growth in the spring, whereas the imidacloprid kept rising over time. Well, that didn't work. So we won't look at that photograph. Strangler fig is a different fig down in South Florida that I think Nate showed some data on fig wax scale. This was just simply a quick and dirty looking at a few trees. And at two, these were very large trees, 3 foot diameter. And at 2 weeks after application, we had high levels and very high mortality of the scale was very obvious. This was at the time the eggs were hatching. They climbed out onto the leaves. And what you're seeing on the right is basically a bunch of dead little crawlers that have just put their mouth parts in, fed, and died. The one on the left is untreated, and they have continued to develop. So in conclusion, we have very rapid uptake with dinotefuran. We measure it in really days to weeks in the landscape. Scott Ludwig has done some work actually with poinsettia, and I think he was able to show adult knockdown within hours after application. So it's a very rapid moving molecule, which makes sense, again, given its physical properties. And so as people have thought about what this means, clearly the rescue treatment is the obvious one, where you have trees or shrubs that are in severe decline at the time of application. This is clearly something to think about using. It also offers an IPM potential. A treat is needed. You can literally put this out and not have to wait several months in the case of some of these large trees for it to get up in the tree. So rather than having to treat in anticipation of a problem, you can literally wait till early in infestation and still get control. And then the other one, as far as IPM, I think goes back to the spider mite business that we've heard about. We simply haven't had safari or dinotefuran in the landscape long enough for me to stand up here and say we are seeing much less spider mite outbreaks than imidacloprid. However, we have not had a lot of reports about it. As far as the toxic levels, they are present in foliage for it looks like 5 to 7 months. We still haven't figured out what our minimum is, but just my gut feel right now is we're probably talking 5 to 7 months for dinotefuran, which means it is going to be less in many cases than imidacloprid and probably clothianidin as well. And finally, all the application methods that we've looked at, the soil drench, the soil injection, this trunk spray, and also our 2% granules, have all been very effective. So I think I've got just got too many questions, but go ahead, right here.
Hi, my understanding of the chemistry is that clothianidin is a transformation product of cyanothoxin, which
yes.
Is a transformation product. I guess I didn't see the chemical structure, but is dimethylamine also a transformation product of
cyanothoxin? I didn't hear the question, the last part of your question.
Dinotefuran? Yes.
No, it is not. It is a separate molecule. The question was, she was asking about clothianidin being a breakdown product of thymethoxam, which it is, but dinotefuran is not. One more question, Stanton.
The water solubility of this material, is there any precautions in sandier?
We don't have any precautions right now for sandier soils. Surprisingly, when we did our soil dissipation studies, which everyone has to do to get things registered, we saw virtually no movement out of the top 6 inches. It was a big surprise. But I think those are done without any plant material present. And I think what you're really seeing is evidenced by these graphs is those roots are acting like a very active sponge, as it were, and they are pulling it out of the soil. The one caution we have is we do suggest, given the solubility of the compound, that it be put out only when the plants are actively growing and pulling water up and transpiring. I think I've got to hang it up here.
Right. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.